Hi, this is Chris Peterson, host of the Penny Forward podcast. The Penny Forward podcast is completely produced by blind-owned businesses, including Taylor's Accessibility Services. Find her web hosting services and accessibility consulting services at taylorarnt.com. That's TAYLORARND.com. Also, we appreciate you listening to the Penny Forward podcast. If you appreciate us, we hope you'll consider providing a small donation to our tip jar to make this podcast possible. It only costs a small amount per episode to produce the Penny Forward podcast, and your assistance will be greatly appreciated. Again, thank you for being a Penny Forward podcast listener.
Welcome to the Penny Forward podcast. Penny Forward is a community of people who are blind, their families and friends who share an interest in financial independence. Visit pennyforward.com to learn more about who we are and what we do. Join us now as we get to know people like us who are working toward their own success. Here is your host, Chris Peterson.
My guest today is Maria Kristic. Maria has several degrees in finance, including a BA, an MBA, and a JD, which is a law degree. She's originally from Bosnia. She came here when she was just turning 5, and she was the first totally blind student in her K-12 school in the little town where she grew up. And we'll hear a lot more about her from her. Maria, thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me, Chris. It's great to be here.
So, you have a very interesting background, being a kind of an immigrant, although I imagine you don't remember very much about your life in Bosnia at this point. But what was it like to be growing up in essentially a foreign country as a blind girl?
Definitely my memories are a bit scattered because, as you pointed out in your intro, I was quite young. I think from what my mom has told me, she was very much adamant that I be able to do things, you know, run around and play and such as all the other kids would. There were definitely some people who were quite protective around me, and she's since become a bit more protective, I think, because of the war and the circumstances that were there. But definitely, you know, some of my earliest memories were, you know, wartime, having to go into a basement at night in case the house was bombed, and hearing sirens outside and the like. So, you know, didn't start any kind of schooling until I came to the US. But as far as I know, with the exception of any stress caused by the war and such, I had a decently typical childhood. But after I came to US, I had a mainstreamed education. I had a teacher for the visually impaired who is low vision herself, and we still keep in touch. And she was absolutely a great inspiration and role model for me. And also I had a Braillist who produced a lot of my hard copy material. And so especially these two women, but also certainly the caterers at my school, really helped to make sure that I had a good, well-rounded education. And so I think, based on what I've heard from others, you know, I think that I have been quite actually, you know, fortunate in a lot of ways. Yes, I was the first blind student, but I received, you know, education in all of the subjects that everyone else did, and did receive supplemental education in certain blindness skills from my TVI. And certainly felt prepared to move on to life after the end of high school when I reached that point. And being the first blind student definitely ensured that I had very good problem solving and research and self-advocacy skills, which have served me well.
There are a lot of teachers of the visually impaired who are themselves blind or low vision. And some of us were fortunate enough to have them, others were not. Since you had one, how do you think being around another blind person growing up impacted your trajectory in life?
It absolutely had a positive impact. There were adults around me, for instance, certain members of the vocational rehabilitation system and certain other teachers and even a special education administrator who had doubts as to whether I could do certain things and whether I should do certain things. They'd say, oh, don't take that class as well. Take calculus and statistics. That might be too much for you. Or, you know, maybe you should think about something else as a career or whatever it was. And having served as a counterpoint to other things that I was hearing, and it enabled me to start discerning how much weight should I give to this person's opinion versus this other person's opinion. And if my TVI, for instance, said that something could be done, I'm going to give her more weight because she has the lived experience. Or even if she doesn't, just the fact that she persevered through her own obstacles in college and such, you know, that served as motivation to me that I can do things, and, you know, that no matter what, you know, she made it through and I can make it through as well. My parents didn't immigrate here with my brother and I for me to not give it my best shot. And obviously they believed that I could accomplish something and that they chose to, you know, immigrate here and stay here so that I could have a better education than anything I would have ever had in Bosnia. So I think that having that TBI who was blind just really helped to, you know, kind of reinforce my motivation. And and even, you know, if she wasn't very familiar with, you know, piece of technology or something, you know, it was very much like she made it even without XYZ piece of technology. So look how much, you know, easier my life is and such. She learned what she needed to learn in some cases on her own. I can do the same. So just absolutely having that role model, I think, really helped me persevere in cases where I might not have because certain other people were discouraging.
We'll get back to our interview in just a moment, but first.
Are you interested in investing, but the jargon has you lost? When you're in an unfamiliar financial environment and need a hand in understanding the lay of the land, Penny Forward is here to help. We provide affordable one-on-one and group education financial programs that help you get out there and achieve your goals. Visit pennyforward.com to learn more about who we are and what we do.
Do you have a short success story that you would like to share on the air? Leave us a message at 952-856-0313. If you missed that number, you can always find it at pennyforward.com/podcast.
Did you have any other blind role models growing up, and who were they?
You know, I didn't particularly. I had met a couple of blind people my age at a picnic for, I guess it was billed as a Parents for Blind Children event, but they also, a lot of them brought their children. So I met a couple of other blind friends, but really I didn't have particularly. And I knew starting from high school, I guess you could say virtually, I had some role models. I joined some mailing lists and such focused on technology. And so I did meet some people that way. And I was able to ask some questions, daily living things, you know, how do you know when the water is boiling non-visually and such? So, you know, virtually the internet absolutely helped me in that regard. And I mean, even that continued, I guess, through to college was when I really, in my undergrad, met some other blind people from whom I had got to ask questions, for instance, about the guide dog lifestyle and to experience what it's like to spend time with dogs when they're not working and such. But I guess I would just very much say that more the internet was really what was helpful to me in terms of blindness skills and blindness technology and such. Until I became involved with the American Council of the Blind in 2016 after I graduated from my graduate program. So that really in the past 5 years is really when I've had the most exposure to blind people that I've ever had.
Wow, that's amazing. Were you learning English at this time also?
Yes. So when I came, I did not speak English, but of course, being five at the time and such, it's very much easier to pick up, you know, kids at that age are sponges. And also the fact that, you know, no one other than my parents really, and a couple of people that we had met who spoke the language, who spoke Croatian, you know, other than that, everyone basically spoke English. So there's nothing like language immersion to, you know, force you to learn it very quickly because you have no other choice. So I think I did learn, pick up a good amount of English fairly quickly. The spelling was definitely harder for me. Because English is not spelled phonetically at all, but thankfully I got there with help from teachers, and of course now, you know, spell check and such. I'm a pretty good speller now because I've made it. I've been very determined to spell things correctly and be able to speak and write like a, you know, as much as I can, like a native speaker and such.
I am a terrible speller, and thank God for spell check because absolutely. That caused a lot of anxiety growing up. So at what point did you start thinking about a career, and how did that then turn into a career in finance?
Sure. I actually did not think I was initially going to have a finance career. I was initially thinking to study computer science. I had enjoyed learning about assistive technology and had started out in terms of my own self-exploration, really, with the Braille note line from HumanWare, and had kind of learned how you could program some of the databases that it used a bit to extend its capabilities and such. And it piqued my interest. And I thought I was going to study computer science, which I did end up doing actually for 5 semesters of my undergrad. However, I had enjoyed economics as a high school subject. I think I really liked how applicable I could see it being in terms of helping to explain everyday situations that I was hearing about in the news, and just how, you know, economics and finance touches so many aspects of life. But I had thought I was going to study computer science, and then various factors convalesced, lack of accessibility of the development environment that was being used, and the fact that some professors weren't willing to let me use something else, and the fact that I was, you know, writing programs that were involving having a mouse, you know, move images and things that I couldn't test. And I just started feeling like maybe this isn't quite the avenue that I am meant to contribute to and make a difference to. And so second semester of junior year, I decided, as I said, I had like enjoyed economics, and I decided to switch and switched my major to economics. And then I kind of thought from there, what am I going to do with this from here? And I initially had thought about perhaps pursuing a PhD in economics. I had started researching programs. And then I thought, well, on the other side, you know, that I could use it in a more applied fashion and applied to, say, an MBA program with a finance degree. And I think I was definitely impacted by the Great Recession. My undergrad was in 2011 is when I completed that. And so we took an economic seminar on contemporary issues. And of course it talked a lot about what caused the financial crisis. And this is of 2007 to 2009, and, you know, compliance efforts and such that have sprung up since. And so I kind of had this interest in compliance, and I thought, okay, I'll perhaps apply to this MBA program, finance, we'll see how this goes. And then I actually, when I went to guide dog school, and I went to Leader Dogs for the Blind, which is where my guide dog Lacey is from, I went there a week after graduating from college, and a couple of board members from Leader happened to be there for an extended period of time during my class because their board meeting got rescheduled, and they lived farther away, so they didn't want to travel back and forth. And so I got to talk with them a good fair amount. And one of them was a corporate lawyer. And he said to me, you know, the finance combination with the MBA and also having a law degree with a, you know, business law focus could be a really powerful combination in all sorts of fields, even if you don't end up wanting to practice law. And I kind of said, okay, and, you know, didn't really initially give it much thought. And then when I got home, I really did start to look into it, and I saw how, you know, a lot of the courses could complement each other, and I thought, why not? You know, I like to learn new things, and this would, you know, provide me with a value add and enable me to look at things from different perspectives, the legal and the business. And so I decided to go for it and research programs, and I applied, and I started my JD and MBA. It was a 4-year program in 2012. And it's a 4-year because certain classes, if you structure it in a certain way, again, because they complement each other, you're able to count them toward both degrees. And so in grad school, I definitely, you know, gravitated more toward the business side of finance and wanted to apply the legal side to the business context rather than as an attorney. And so I found I had some internships. I began initially one summer, there was an opportunity to participate in they called it a finance academy, and it was working with a banker on an applied project. And so I took that opportunity. And then later on, I applied through my school's career portal for internships. And I got a couple of those. One was with an investment banking firm, and one was with an industrial development agency, which provided various tax incentives to help with community economic development. The way I got my current job was through one of my professors on the law side. It was a class on the legal aspects of raising money in terms of startups, raising capital. And he liked my work. And out of the blue, one day he asked if I was interested in economic development. And I said, yes. And in fact, I've had this internship that is focused on this name. And he happened to be on the board of the Dormitory Authority where I'm working. And he sent my resume. And one thing led to another with various interviews with senior management, and they had this need for post-issuance compliance for tax-exempt debt, and they felt with my background that I would be suitable. And so I have been working there since 2017, and I work with the CFO and definitely do lots of interesting things. Besides that, I've been able to help lead a couple of teams when we were doing some process improvement, and I do some contract reviews because of my legal background as well. And they even roped me in when they found out that I'd studied some computer science when they were doing some website development. And of course, there were accessibility guidelines that they have to follow as part of the state, but they also wanted to make sure it really was usable and accessible. And hey, we have a screen reader user. So I was even able to assist with that. So it's really been a great experience so far.
We'll continue our interview in a moment, but first.
Many people I talk to about personal finance are fans of a talk show host named Dave Ramsey. Dave Ramsey has written a number of books and also produces a radio talk show and podcast about personal finance. And one of his mottos is that every dollar counts. And he's absolutely right. You may think that spending an extra $5 on a cup of coffee or eating out one extra time a month isn't going to hurt your finances, and it probably won't. You'll get paid again. You'll probably have enough money to get by. But every dollar does count when it comes to savings, and savings can build up naturally and organically over time by doing things as simple as putting away your spare change in a bowl at night. I used to do this, and when I went to cash in my bowl of spare change, and we're talking a big old Tupperware salad bowl kind of a thing here, I had over $100 there, and it took around a year to fill up that bowl. Now, if I can put away $100 a year in spare change, what could I do with every extra dollar going into savings? Or even just some extra dollars going into savings? Over time, if you put it away and forget about it, you could be surprised how much wealth you could build for yourself. And that can help you to weather hard times, take advantage of rare opportunities, and more powerfully support the causes that you deeply care about.
Do you have a short success story you want to share on the air? Leave us a message at 952-856-0313. If you missed that number, you can always find us at pennyforward.com/podcast.
So to summarize, you got out of college with your BA, and then you went to grad school and did your MBA and your JD at the same time, right?
Yes.
And were you working at all, either during that time or between grad school and your undergrad?
No, I took, so yes, there was a year between my undergrad and my grad school. And no, I did not work in that in-between time. And during the grad school, my work was those internships. So I was not doing any kind of full-time work. I did have, in terms of work experience during my undergrad, not specifically finance related, but I had done some work with the Disability Student Office in terms of helping them to streamline some of their processes and advising on how they could, you know, best assist students, especially in terms of producing mathematical related content in alternative formats and such. So I did have those, you know, student experiences as work experiences initially, which, you know, carried me through then to the internships and then on to the full time.
Some of my guests, when I talk to them about their lives and careers, have a very detailed plan. And for others, it kind of just all falls together based on who they meet or what opportunities get put in front of them. Which category do you think you fall into?
I think I would fall more into that second category. It wasn't that I had no idea of what I wanted to do, but I didn't want to completely close the door on certain opportunities either. I did, you know, have a vague idea in terms of when I was doing my interviews for full time. I, you know, interviewed with certain banks for financial analyst positions. I did know, you know, broadly, I wanted to focus more on, say, the corporate finance side versus the investing side and perhaps a compliance role. And I had, you know, but maybe imagine myself more in initially the private sector, not for any really compelling reason, but more just because that's where, you know, I saw a lot of people going after they graduated from my program. And but again, I didn't want to be so specific that I was, you know, closing the door on certain opportunities. And so when this opportunity came my way from this professor, I mean, I'd never heard of this, you know, organization before, and I had never considered working for state government, although we as a public authority can function a bit more like a private company because we're not directly part of the state. We're sort of more of a component and we make our own money. So I guess it's kind of the best of both worlds, private company, public mission. But, you know, I guess, you know, you could say it definitely just did fall into place. There was always something with other interviews that I had done. Either I wouldn't be called for a second or something didn't agree with me. And so when this, you know, fell into place, right place at the right time, it just really seemed like it was, you know, meant to happen and that it would be a good fit.
We all have run into accessibility challenges with school, with work, with life in general. What were some of those challenges for you, and how did you keep going and push through them?
Yeah, definitely there were challenges. I can think of a most recent one, program that we've used that was, it's a mainframe program, can you believe? And the interface that everyone typically uses to access it is just completely, it is so inaccessible that a screen reader can't even tell that it's on the screen, much less indicate any controls in any way. In something like that, I was actually able to delegate the actual retrieval of information from that system to someone else. And I was then able to, when I received the information, do what I needed to do with it. I have had other instances where, you know, things, image-based PDFs, for instance, which I've used the converted using optical character recognition, converted those to text. I have had, you know, especially in terms of my college and graduate experiences, you know, certain graphical information that I've needed to speak with a professor to have described to me. And that might mean, depending on complexity, meeting with them afterward to have the description provided. And so, you know, I would definitely just say, I think the takeaway is to be creative and resourceful and, you know, really, because you have, you know, you might need some help, but you definitely have the strength and the motivation within you to take the next steps to solve accessibility challenges. It might not be, you know, in the way that is initially imagined. And, you know, nowadays, for instance, I use Aira as well. And I have used Aira at work sometimes when I've needed to access, I actually had to access something that was handwritten once. And so I used Aira. So, you know, the ways that such challenges might be resolved evolves. But, you know, I think for me, kind of seeing it as a challenge, meaning something that I can somehow surmount rather than as an obstacle, I think has really been the key in being able to, you know, overcome it in some way, shape, or form. And I guess I'm, you know, I've been lucky. I've heard, you know, some people needing to really, you know, pay for scripting and such of products. And just, you know, in terms of what I've needed to use so far, I haven't, you know, really had to do that. But I think having, you know, the attitude of it and also just being learning what I could about my screen reader and my assistive technology, because I am kind of a good amount self-taught, just the combination of those two things, being willing to learn and having a bit of an attitude of kind of adventure about it, are what have helped me to persevere and to succeed.
I think a lot of people get stuck on the idea of needing to ask for help. And if they feel like they're going to need to ask for help, and they can't do it independently, then they can't do it at all. What is your response to that?
You know, it's definitely something I've struggled with as well. I think we do have this pressure, especially being, you know, a minority, low incidence population. We have to, you know, prove, you see the employment statistics and such, we have to prove that we're able to do everything, and we have to work, you know, harder and all of that. And, you know, I've struggled with that too. I just want to get it done. I want to get it done myself. And I think just having to kind of, to be able to step back and sort of observe a little bit more objectively and saying, you know, my feelings and saying, okay, I'm feeling this way, but then, you know, kind of thinking it through, like, I'm not the only one who needs help in this situation. Everyone needs help in a certain situation. You know, maybe I need some help with, you know, getting a ride somewhere or having someone read me this document. Well, that person might be really awful at using computers or something, and they might need my help with that. You know, really just kind of stepping back and realizing that we're all interdependent has definitely, you know, helped me with that. It's definitely a work in progress, right? But I think even something like Aira has been liberating for me. I kind of feel like, okay, I'm paying these people, you know, this isn't someone's obligation that they maybe are doing out of guilt or what have you. You know, this is a bit of a, if you will, sort of like an employment or an assistant, I mean, relationship. So that's helped, that's assisted with that. But I think even just the, if I'm asking a coworker or a friend or something, I just kind of have to sometimes remind myself, like, don't think about it so much, just do it and get the help and get move on with what needs to be done, accomplish what you need to accomplish, and something will somehow come up and present itself where I will be able to do something for that other person as well. And then just to kind of remind myself, like, I'm not any less worthy of a person since I've now asked for help.
I love that answer.
We'll continue our interview in a moment, but first,
hi, this is Byron Lee from superblink.org. Are you thinking about starting a podcast, but you just don't know where to begin? I can help you through the entire process. Everything from setting up your first RSS feed to editing the audio, finding music, and inserting sound effects. Check out superblink.org for more information.
Do you have a tip or trick you've discovered that makes managing your finances easier? Tell us about it at 952-856-0313. If you missed that number, you can always find us at pennyforward.com/podcast.
Is there anything that's coming up next for Maria that you want to share with the audience?
You know, I definitely see myself continuing to work in where I am now at my current job. I do like it quite a bit. And my volunteering with the American Council of the Blind, we'll kind of see where that goes. I've been treasurer of certain special interest affiliates, and it always kind of seems like new opportunities or different opportunities come my way with that over time. And so I'll be interested to see where that goes. But I guess I just, for a closing, you know, I wanted to, I guess, just say, you know, it's anyone can do this. You know, anyone can be successful if you have, you know, the right attitude and also the, you know, right company around you. So, you know, I'd definitely suggest for people to take a look at people around them or form a network of people who they aspire to be like, and spend time around them. And also to really, you know, believe in themselves. I know it's hard. There are people around us who think, oh my gosh, you're blind. Like, how would you use the phone and how do you get dressed? And, oh, I couldn't imagine living if I was blind and such. But, you know, we have to reclaim our own narrative, find people who uplift us and really have that belief in ourselves, because we can do it. Maybe we're doing it in a different way, but you know what? We can. And the our blindness isn't, it's an opportunity. It's an opportunity to have a specific journey. It's an opportunity to become more resourceful and be able to, I would say, even, you know, look inward and have some awareness that we might not be able to as easily because of all of the, you know, visual stimuli and such. And just that it gives us an opportunity to provide a different perspective to people around us. And that I kind of like the term different ability, that yes, there's the disabling aspect of society, but that it really is giving us an ability in different ways. And so, you know, I think just, I want to, you know, continue on the way I am now and see, you know, where life takes me. And, you know, I definitely, if, you know, anyone who's feeling discouraged out there, I would, you know, definitely just say that sometimes you never know how things will turn up, but, you know, kind of keep at it one step at a time and, you know, things will fall into place in the way that they are meant to. And I just, you know, I think there's just no better time to be blind with all the, you know, technology and such out there. And I just definitely, I hope that my, you know, humble story perhaps, you know, serves as inspiration to someone, or at least even just some kind of a pick me up that here's one person who has, you know, made it and encourages people to, you know, try and work toward, you know, fulfilling their own goals and aspirations.
Is there anything I should have asked you that I didn't think to ask you before we go?
I don't think so. I think we've pretty well covered it.
I think we have two. Maria, thanks for being here. It's been a real pleasure. I wish you the best of luck. And I'm sure that you will be an inspiration to somebody. And I appreciate it very, very much.
Well, thank you, Chris. Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
We hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of the Penny Forward podcast. Penny Forward is a community of people who are blind. Their families and friends who share an interest in financial independence. Visit pennyforward.com to learn more about who we are and what we do. Until next time, from all of us in the Penny Forward community, thanks for listening.